Welcome to Virtual Economy, a podcast about the business of games for the rest of us. We're your hosts. I'm Michael Footer.
And I'm Amanda Farrow.
On each episode, we'll cover the biggest business beats and bring in expert commentary from lawyers, analysts, and industry pros. This is episode 92. It's time for Quick Hits.
Sounded so good.
Why, thank you. Especially considering I'm fighting the most brutal of summer colds right now.
Shared mood?
Yeah.
I guess.
So, it's been 3 weeks since our last episode. We took a lovely vacation.
And then immediately got sick.
Of course, the world kept turning, news kept being made, stuff kept happening, shit kept falling apart.
And we couldn't ask anyone to just knock it off for a week. We were on vacation.
So we have our tea. I'm not gonna suck on a cough drop during the show. But we're going to have two episodes this weekend. We decided that we were going to break things up because it was looking a little gnarly.
Yeah. So what we're going to do today and tomorrow is we've got a couple of different episodes. So as Mike so beautifully put it for our introduction, I always love it when you sing.
Why, thank you.
So we are going to be doing a roundup of Investment Interlude. And so many quick hits.
So just to explain what our show notes look like, they're in outline format. Our final quick hit is item AA. That's right, there are 27 quick hits in the last couple of weeks since we've been gone. But
we didn't want to miss out on
anything.
No,
we didn't want to miss out on anything. And there's a lot of really interesting stuff that's going on here.
We wanted to... I kept getting messages from people being like, I can't wait for the next virtual economy on X topic. And I'm like, oh no. The virtual economy is going to get chunky.
So tomorrow's episode, because we're going to record back to back. We usually only do that during earnings period. But the next episode, episode 93, tomorrow is going to be focused on a couple of big things. And we'll just give you a little preview now. So if you're expecting us to talk about something, just stay tuned. We're going to be talking about a couple of big deals that were made between publishers and independent developers that happened a couple weeks ago. We're going to be talking about the Switch, the Gabe Gear, the Steam Deck.
Yeah, the Gabe Gear. Oh my goodness, I have to tell Gabriel that we're calling it the Gabe Gear.
That's really good. And then we're going to be talking about Stadia's change in payment stuff. We're going to be talking about the Sony and indie row that happened.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to be talking about Humble Bundle because we covered some changes that were happening there. And now we have kind of a final resolution on that. So all of that's going to be on tomorrow. Episode 93 tomorrow. But this is episode 92. We're going to be covering a ton of investment things. Gosh.
So much is happening.
And then 27 quick hits. That will, in fact, be quick, but there's just so many of them. We didn't want you sitting there for 3 hours with your earbuds going, Mike, Amanda, please just shut up.
And listen, we wouldn't have blamed you.
No.
So we are going to try to keep this to about an hour.
Yes.
Maybe less.
We'll see.
Tomorrow is probably going to be a bit chunkier.
Yeah, we have a lot of platform conversation. Yeah.
It'll probably be over an hour for our conversation tomorrow. But you know what, Mike? What are we going to get started with today?
Well, we're going to set the stage because we are now halfway through the calendar year. We are into July, and Drake Star Partners has released its global gaming industry update covering the first half of 2021.
Yeah.
So far this year, there has been $60 billion in disclosed deal value across 635 deals. Now, in fact,
this doesn't include all of the various terms that don't get disclosed to the public.
And it doesn't even include some of the stuff we're going to be talking about. So if there are two deals, if there's a deal between two private companies, there's no reason to disclose that.
Absolutely.
So there's that. So we are rapidly approaching, according to Drake Star Partners, 2x the entirety of 2020's dollar volume.
For first half.
First half is just about twice of what was invested in all of 2020.
And 2020 began a really, really interesting year for mergers and acquisitions, as well as for various investment expenditures for both public and private companies within video games.
Absolutely. So we have some breakdown on that.
All right, walk me through it.
All right, M&A deals represent 169 of the 635 deals and total $23 billion of the total $60 billion. So about a third, a little bit more than a third.
That's huge.
Yeah, so that's full-on mergers and acquisitions.
I love that.
So that includes SPACs, that includes companies that were full-on acquired, all that stuff.
And listen.
Oh, actually, no, I'm sorry. It does not include SPACs. No, SPACs are grouped in with IPOs.
SPACs are grouped in with IPOs for a good reason. So private companies have raised 4.8 billion bells, I mean dollars, I mean bells, through 364 minority financing deals from VCs and strategic funders. So now let's talk a little bit about all of the various IPOs and the special something. Oh, gosh. No, it's okay. I looked it up this morning. Special purpose acquisition company.
So just a reminder, a SPAC is a company that raises money, that raises investment dollars, but they're not sure who they're going to acquire yet.
So when
they acquire somebody, there's that merger that happens that where the SPAC becomes the entity that they acquire. It's a very confusing thing. It's often combined with PIPE, private investment and public equity.
It's really weird. Like, how most folks in investment tend to talk about it is that it tends to provide a streamlined pathway to take private companies public.
Exactly. So it's a different path than the IPO. But speaking of IPOs, there have been 37 of them in the game industry.
Whoa.
37 IPOs with a total of $11.2 billion in proceeds and three additional multi-billion dollar SPAC deals.
That's incredible.
It's wild.
And finally, there have been $16.4 billion across secondary and debt offerings.
So when GameStop goes ahead and they sell 500 million shares or whatever it was, that's a secondary offering.
It is.
All right. So major companies like Tencent, Epic, ByteDance, Embracer, gosh, we talk about Embracer all the time. EA has been big this year, right?
It's been really interesting watching EA make big moves because that's not usually what they've done, especially in the last 5 years.
Yeah, and it kicked off with Codemasters, and of course there were some other companies in there that we've talked about along the way.
Blue Mobile was a big one for them specifically. Absolutely.
And then Take-Two as well. Now, Take-Two tried to purchase Codemasters, but EA kind of swept in and said, "Nah, baby, we got more money for you.
Or we have a better environment to offer you, potentially." There's probably a lot going on there that wasn't just billions of bells for Tom Nook.
But wait, moving into the next item.
Speaking of Take-Two, they have acquired Dynamixyz.
Yeah, the spelling is Dynamixyz, or Z, depending on what part of the country, world you're from. If you're from...
Country world you're from! So listen, Mike and I have just, in our own minds, we've just merged the United States and Canada, it's fine.
It's alright.
So anyway, our own silly family aside, Dynamixyz is a facial animation company that worked on Red Dead Redemption 2, NBA 2K21... Netflix series Love, Death, and Robots.
Which we really enjoy.
For the most part. There are some in there that are a little questionable, but there have been some interesting ones. I love those kinds of vignettes. And films, including Avengers Endgame. Now, talking about financial terms, these were not disclosed. Take-Two's acquisition means that Dynamixyz will be exclusively working on Take-Two projects.
Which is really interesting.
Which is kind of a bummer.
It is. I mean, like, on one hand, they might have enough work for them that they can fill up all of their time. On the other hand, that's actually cutting off a revenue stream. You think that... Like, think about Unreal, right? And think about how Unreal serves both the video game industry and serves the film and automotive industries.
That's exactly what I was thinking, is that this really does create less of a revenue diversification. So I really hope the terms for Dynamixyz is really good. And I hope it justifies having to be laser focused on a...
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting decision. And of course, we don't know all the details and couldn't possibly imagine because we weren't part of those conversations. But this would have been an opportunity for Take-Two, if they took a different path, to diversify and broaden their revenue streams. And even if this is one of those things where if the video game industry were to take a little dip, there might be other use for...
We're going to see LA Noire 2. That's what I'm going to say right now.
Oh, man. And yeah, it was, what was the name of that studio?
It was Bondi.
Bondi, right, with the toxic leadership and all that.
Yeah, that's probably why things went a little sideways. But yeah. in my own mind, perhaps I will have a Rockstar game that I will play again.
Maybe. Bully 2, baby.
Bully 2! I don't know if they'd need facial animations for...
Yeah, they would.
They would go hyper-real. They go hyper-real for it. All right. Actually, I want to see that now.
All right.
All right, call us Take 2.
Moving on. Sony has announced it has acquired longtime partner Finnish studio Housemarque, founded in 1995. Housemarque most recently released PS5 exclusive Returnal. It's been a staple on PlayStation systems, of course, with releases including Nex Machina, Resogun, which was a PS4 launch title.
I remember that.
And going all the way back to the wonderful Super Stardust HD on PS3. No terms were disclosed. They are putting a ring on it. Now, Housemarque later said that, yeah, they were approached by some other studios. So maybe this was Sony finally moving in the same way that they moved on Insomniac.
I would imagine.
To make sure that they didn't lose a major second-party partner.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of Sony, Sony has also announced the acquisition of port studio Nixies, which has done extensive work with Square Enix. Most recently, Nixies worked on the PC port of Marvel's Avengers.
Which we hear is actually pretty good. What's interesting to me about this is that purchasing Nixies, which does specialize in PC ports, I mean, that's not all they've done, mm-hmm. but their PC ports have been pretty good. I wonder if this is actually Sony kind of acknowledging that they need to step up their game on PC a little bit, despite what Jim Ryan has said recently.
Well, Jim Ryan is not the be-all, end-all at Sony. It's not a monolithic corporation. There are many, many, many different people working there, so it would not surprise me.
Yes. All right, what's next?
PUBG Corp owner Krafton has acquired ThingsFlow, which makes HelloBot, a chat-based content platform, so think like messaging bots. Mm. I know that Ubisoft had Sam, which was also an AI
chatbot. Is that still operating?
I actually don't know if Sam is still operating. I haven't seen Sam in a while. So, don't know. To be determined.
Yeah, but either of Splinter Cell's fans, so hey-o.
Oh, that hits me right in the bad place. That's not okay. HelloBot has more than 4 million users in Korea and Japan. Krafton CEO CH Kim said this, quote, ThingsFlow is equipped with deep insights about content consumption trends that we can leverage to create new and innovative experiences for audiences globally. No terms were disclosed and nothing of value was said.
Yes. Well, there you go. Esports company Complexity Gaming has been acquired by Canadian Esports org GameSquare. Ooh. The deal is worth $8.5 million, with former Complexity shareholders controlling about 47% of GameSquare after the deal. Complexity's big shareholders include Dallas Cowboys owner Jerry Jones's family, Goff Capital, and Complexity founder and CEO Jason Lake. The deal also makes GameSquare the agency of record for the Cowboys esports ventures, including a team based out of the, quote, GameStop Performance Center. Remember when we said GameStop? Oh, they're going to get into esports. All they did was they slapped their name on the esports center. It was the most bananas use of funding
for
a company.
That's the most GameStop use.
But here's the thing. You know what I didn't put in here, and I think is worth noting. And this
is it perhaps that the $8.5 million US is actually worth $50 million Canadian?
No, and she's joking. To be clear, the conversion isn't quite that bad.
No, the conversion is not that bad. I just like making fun of the conversion.
I get some updates every now and then about analysts on LinkedIn, and there are a couple of analysts who are not covering GameStop anymore and have refused to because GameStop.
You and I talked about this.
Yeah, you and I talked about this. We didn't talk about it on the show. The reason why they're doing that is because GameStop's strategy that needs to be articulated. They want leadership to actually articulate what they're doing. And I think it's because of the mismatch in stock and share price with the realities of the companies operating.
In addition to the fact that the current chairman of the board would like to turn GameStop into a competitor for Amazon.
So I think what's happening is that means the analysts are not going to be recommending buys for their clients. And I think that maybe we'll see something at the next quarter when you have the new CEO and the CFO who are in place, when you've got...
I never...
board leadership in place.
Rather, I rarely root for companies to fail. I'm really hoping that they can figure this out. It's a cornerstone of the game industry.
It is. I mean, I don't like their business practices.
I don't either. It still doesn't mean that I want it to, out and out fail. I just want them to fix it.
Yes, and maybe they will. And I don't know what that looks like. And that's the point. The analysts don't know exactly what it looks like either. And until there's a business strategy articulated, we're going to see more analysts who are like, nope, I'm not covering you anymore. I'm not making recommendations for my clients on you. I'm hands off. And that's actually bad for GameStop.
Yeah, it's absolutely bad for GameStop. But you know what is good business strategy?
Oh.
Funcom has announced a majority investment in David Goldfarb's studio, The Outsiders. That's pretty cool,
right? Yeah, that's great. And David's a great guy.
Absolutely. The acquisition will see the studio grow while leadership remains in place. Thank goodness.
Yes.
The Outsiders is currently working on a rhythm shooter called Metal Hellsinger.
Which, Troy Baker's the voice in that, right? We saw that a bunch during Summer Game Mess
last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you might recall that this particular developer had a deal with Private Division for its then-in-development game, Darkborn. Unfortunately, Darkborn, as cool as it looked, was shelved, and we're hopeful that it gets a new chance thanks to the acquisition. No terms were disclosed. Additionally, Funcom has announced the opening of a new studio in Bucharest, Romania, which is very cool. This location will be the headquarters for the publisher's QA operations. Funcom is based in Oslo and has locations in Lisbon, Portugal, and is it Raleigh?
Raleigh.
Raleigh, North Carolina. And of course, they now have The Outsiders in Stockholm.
And this is the first of many studio openings we're going to talk about today. We grouped it in here because we were talking about Funcom already. It didn't make sense to split them up, but you're going to see that theme. Yeah, wait for quick hits. All right, Team 17 has announced it has agreed to purchase Ireland-based edutainment app developer StoryToys for $26.5 million US.
Good for them. What a great fit for Team 17.
And what an interesting growth opportunity for them. The deal also offers up an earnout of $22.5 million US for hitting certain targets within 3 years of the acquisition.
Nice.
And the deal's all cash from Team 17's reserves.
Ooh, wow.
So, good for them.
Overcooked, bringing in the big bucks.
Yeah, right? StoryToys was founded in 2011 with a target audience of young children under the age of 8. It's partnered with the Lego Group, Disney, Pixar, Penguin, Sesame Workshop, Warner Brothers, Hasbro, Nickelodeon, and more. StoryToys apps have been downloaded an aggregated 100 million times.
Look, they sound so familiar. I'm sure that I must have downloaded...
Probably for one of the kids.
For one of our younger kids.
But this is what's really interesting. Not only does this give Team 17 a foothold in the edutainment vertical, which after COVID-19 has grown.
Absolutely.
But all of that access to those partners, all of those existing relationships in place that Team 17 could capitalize on.
That's beautiful.
So Technavio predicted that global education apps will grow 46 billion between 2020 and 2024. That huge growth.
That doesn't surprise me. We've seen, so back in the 90s, if we look backward to look ahead, a lot of what we saw with the edutainment games, so like our daughter is currently playing like Putt Putt Goes to the Moon. She was playing Reader Rabbit, like all of the games that I played when I was little, yeah. Math Blasters?
Is she doing Math Blasters?
I don't know if she's been on Math Blasters yet, but I really hope she has, because if we want to talk about a great game, Math Blasters ruled. Obviously, this is looking through a very rose-tinted lens of nostalgia. But back then, that is what we had. We had very, very limited, although enjoyable, because who doesn't love Putt-Putt Goes to the Moon, edutainment games. And that was how I grew up. I grew up with edutainment games in my schools. Like, in my elementary school, it was relatively new. We had a great computer lab, so we had all of these
games. Yeah, same with us. Like, we had Carmen Sandiego, but at home, there was a rule. I had a TI-99-4A, so we had cartridges. We had these little weird-shaped cartridges that you had to, chunk into the...
I'm familiar. I believe I wrote about... I'm pretty sure I wrote about that particular computer in my history of computers class. In my hardware class for a history of computers paper I wrote back in, 2005.
So, my mom made me play the same, I got to choose, thankfully. But it was three educational cartridges, and I had to play. There was this one story about this family that goes to the beach, and they go clamming, and how many clams, and I swear to God, it's, burned into my brain, because I went over and over. And finally, I said to my mom, I'm like, you know, I know the answers to all this stuff. It's not like they change the problems every time.
It's not a roguelike edutainment game, Michael.
No. It's not even procedurally generated. Jeez.
I grew up in the heyday of edutainment games. I really did. I came of age in, the mid to late 90s when I was in elementary school. So these are games that I played. I'm so excited that we're going to see another boom in edutainment mm-hmm. for little kids, and parents get it. And I really hope parents get more and more into it as well. I'm going to have to think about that. This might actually be a really...
That's a good Washington Post story
for
you?
That's a good Washington Post story for me, I think. Anyway, I digress. Let's continue.
Moving on.
MTG has announced the acquisition of India word games developer PlaySimple. PlaySimple is known for a number of apps, including daily-themed crossword, Word Trip, Word Jam, and Word Wars.
I'm sorry, daily-themed crossword is the most SEO app store name.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
It's what you want. That's the SEO money right there.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, it has earned 75 million installs and 7 million MAU.
Wow, that's pretty good for PlaySimple over there.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
So the deal is worth 3.09 billion SEK upfront, so approximately $360 million US, with earnout expected to be an additional 1.287 billion SEK.
That's right from their press release. That's a very specific number.
Totally fine. No worries. Which translates to about $150 million US. This is MTG's third major acquisition since December 2020. Hutch and Ninja Kiwi both preceded this. The upfront will be paid in 77% cash and 23% new Class B shares.
Yeah, that's huge.
That's a good deal.
We're keeping our eye on MTG. They're making moves there.
They're making moves.
Yep.
And what did we talk about at the end of last year?
Moves.
We're talking specifically about Swedish moves.
Yeah. Yep, you're right.
Swedish moves, man.
Mm-hmm. Gotta love them Swedish moves. Love them Swedish moves. Swedish moves.
I love that I was taking a sip of tea just as he started singing, and I'm like, that's going to go right through my nose.
Anybody who's watched Crazy Ex-Girlfriend will catch the reference. Anyway, Om Nom Run developer Kukoi has been acquired by SciPlay Corporation. No terms were disclosed, but Om Nom Run, which is a partnership with Cut the Rope dev Zepto Labs, has crossed 30 million downloads. Kukoi uses a proprietary modular tech platform that includes a number of feature components and real-time multiplayer engines that can be used across games.
That's awesome.
SciPlay says the acquisition will be the foundation of their growth in the $20 billion plus casual gaming segment.
Oh, I'm sorry. What's this about casual gaming being completely relevant and super important to the game industry?
You can't see it, but I'm doing the money thing with my hands.
You know what? But by the time episode 100 comes out, they will be able to
They'll be able
see
to
it.
See my money hands?
Yeah.
My diamond hands?
Your diamond
hands. Yeah, I don't have paper hands. I got diamond hands.
Yeah, diamond hands.
I got
All right.
Dogecoin.
That reminds me of a really interesting story. The founder of Dogecoin actually came right out and said that he is done with crypto. So that was an interesting find for me on Twitter before.
He went in. It's like a right-wing establishment attempt to control currency. Like,
it was really interesting.
And I don't disagree.
Go on.
Speaking of going on.
I will go on, and we will talk about Discord. Discord has acquired Centropy, which is a company that has developed an AI anti-harassment technology, and no terms were disclosed.
Again, both private companies, no terms disclosed.
So this is great news for Discord and its users. I know that Discord, based on their transparency report, they have a lot of work to do to deal with their harassment problems, with some of the biggest problems on their platform. So this is a good step in that direction, but it means that Centropy's existing client base is currently on the hunt for new solutions. The company shut down its Protect service on July 1st and will sunset its Detect and Defend products on September 30th. Protect helped end users protect themselves from social media abuse on Twitter. Detect and Defend were enterprise solutions that provided abuse detection and end-to-end moderation workflow for community moderators, respectively.
Yeah. So the interesting
thing—that's a tough one because, like, in one breath, we're talking about creating safer spaces on Discord. Love that for Discord. Don't love the fact that this is taking away technology from other folks that clearly were using the service.
It's the end user stuff. I hope that someone comes through with another product for end users because I think it's important. I wasn't even aware of it, so it was interesting to read about it. Tailwind, a new studio that will focus on Roblox, has announced its first funding round in the amount of $800,000. The studio was founded by Mike Allender, previously of King's Innovation Studio. Remember, King is the Candy Crush company now owned by Activision.
I do know that.
Yes, I know you know that, but our listeners might not have remembered.
Well, thank you.
No problem. Georgina Fels, previously of Big Pixel Studios, is the other founder. The studio has announced the hire of Theo Docking, the developer behind Roblox hit Bloopville. The funders include Ian Livingstone, founder of Hero Capital, Chris Lee and Phil Phil Mansell, CEO of Jagex, Sean Rutland, CEO and co-founder of Hutch, Jazz Purewall, lawyer and chairman of Rust Studio Facepunch, Athan Butt, founding partner of Areem, Rupert Lohman, founder of Gamer Network, and early Roblox investor Guzman Diaz. Funding will be used to support Tailwind's first game, Breezy Bay, which is due soon. Tailwind is part of Roblox's accelerator program also.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Istanbul-based Dream Games has become the latest unicorn. That is a private company with at least a $1 billion in valuation. Its Series B round brought in $155 million and puts the valuation over the billion-dollar mark. Its Series A was only, you know, it was a modest $50 million.
That's only like 50.
Only $50 million. Every time that Mike and I talk about money in this particular way, we're just like, it's just all funny money.
Yeah.
After like, the numbers after get 5 so million big, bucks, it's all funny money.
Space is so big that you can't fathom how big space is.
Correct. And obviously capitalism.
So let's send our billionaires into the sun.
Nice. Continuing. So the modest $50 million, but it was the largest in Turkey startup history. And it was only 4 months ago.
Yeah.
The round was co-led by Index Ventures and Makers Fund, with Balderton Capital, IVP, and Quora also participating. Dream Games' largest title, Royal Match, launched in March and now has more than 6 million monthly active users and has made $20 million per month in revenue from purchases, not ads.
That's wild that they can that they monetize that much in, what, 5 months?
I get it.
Yeah,
but
4 months? 4 months.
I'm curious to see what that game is now. I kind of want to download it to see what it's like. I want to see their in-game economy.
Yeah.
That sounds neat.
So we do have some more like new studio announcements and quick hits, but all the ones that have funding attached to them where they announced funding are up
right here.
So this is now our third one, I think.
Yeah.
Dropfake, a new studio founded by former EA vice president Catherine DeLeon, has raised $9 million in seed funding in a round led by March Gaming, Fun Plus Ventures, Corside VC, 1UP Ventures, and Areem and Company. That's the second time we've heard Areem today. Participated. Dropfake's first game will be a strategy title, and it is a fully remote studio. I think we're going to see a lot more of that following COVID.
I think so, too. And I hope that we're going to see a little bit more of a hybrid approach, because there is nothing quite like being in person and jamming in person. So I hope that even if they don't have a centralized office, that they do like,
retreats.
I don't know, like quarterly jams.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they get together. I hope that they do that so that everybody feels good. Dublin-based Vela Games has raised its Series A round, amounting to $17.5 million. Novator led the round with Novator partner Birger Mar Ragnarsson joining the Vela board. Ubisoft and London venture partners also participated. This brings the total raise to $24 million. Vela is working on Project V, a multiplayer online co-op game that's part PvP and part PvE.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Not a lot of details yet, but the concept. Obviously, I have a basic idea of what they're working on because that's all they put forward. I'm interested to see more.
I like PvE. I don't know if I like PvP.
PvP.
If it's an on...
Interestingly, it was they split them out. It wasn't PvPvE. It was PvP and PvE.
So it's interesting. Maybe they're taking the Fortnite approach.
Maybe.
Right?
Maybe, yeah.
Because if they're doing an online co-op game, it's really difficult to do co-op as, I don't know, PvP?
Yes, absolutely.
But we'll see.
Yeah.
Unless they make it, like, super team-based. I'm getting in the weeds now. Sorry.
That's okay. Fast Travel Games, developers of the recent VR release Wraith the Oblivion, which is in the World of Darkness universe.
I love that you gesture to me every time that you talk about World of Darkness. It's this ongoing thing in this household, and also pretty much everywhere I exist. They're just like, well, you're a vampire. You understand.
Yes. That's not exactly what I meant, but yes. Yes.
Continue.
So Fast Travel Games has raised $4 million. The round was led by Brightly Ventures with participation from existing inventors Industrifonden.
Oh, interesting.
Creades. Industrifonden, Creades, and Inbox Capital. Those are three different things. Industrifonden, Creades, and Inbox Capital. Industrial fondant.
If you say it more than three times, I feel like you're just playing with it. I just want to know.
It's just, I get so, like, I start saying it, and then I get to, like, fondant, and it's like, and in my head, I'm picturing bread and cheese. Bread and melted, like, hot cheese.
Like fondue.
Yes, exactly.
Were you losing that particular, that you had the image of it, but you weren't quite sure how to communicate it?
Well, but then it's like fondant, but it's not fondant. So it's like fondue, fondant, fondant.
Fondant.
Fondant. Oh, but you, no, that's...
But nobody eats nobody fondant. Nobody eats fondant. Anyway.
Wow, we're off the rails. Welcome back, everybody.
Clearly we missed you all. Esports tournament company Community Gaming has raised $2.3 million in seed funding. The round was led by blockchain-focused investment firm CoinFund and other crypto companies, including Dapper Labs, Animoca Brands, Multicoin Capital, 1KX, Warburg Ceres, and Hashed. Also participating were 35 Ventures, Mark Pincus's Workplay Ventures, Play Ventures, Whale Shark, and Gen G Esports and Rally Network founder Kevin Chu. Consensus invested in a pre-seed round, and Community Gaming plans to build out automation for its tournaments.
Interesting stuff. I guess so that anybody can go and set up a tournament.
I love that.
And have
though.
All that stuff run. That's I love pretty
that.
Cool.
Considering that we know lots of people that are working in the competitive space, especially on Twitch, it'd be interesting to see something like that be able to be more automated because running tournaments is hard.
Indeed. All right, Buzz Capital has announced investments totaling $594,000 in two companies, Dream Harvest and Fundamentally Games. Dream Harvest is currently developing two projects, Neuroslicers, a post-cyberpunk strategy game for PC. Amanda's smiling, and you know why, because she loves that cyberpunk. But this is post-cyberpunk. It's post-post-modernist. It's post-post-post-classical.
Okay, so we're not in art history right now.
Oh, and Neuronet. Neuronet Mendax Proxy, an interactive narrative game. Fundamentally Games is planning on publishing on PC and mobile, and the publisher will announce its slate later this year. Premier Capital led the round with support from Buzz Capital.
So this next one's really cool. We've talked about Resolution Games, obviously. So Resolution Games, the studio behind Demio.
Which I need to try.
It is a VR RPG dungeon crawler, has announced its Series C round. The $25 million round was co-led by Qualcomm Ventures and Bitcraft Ventures with participation from Knutson Holdings AB and prior investors GV, Misma, GP Bullhound, Partech, Creandum, Initial Capital, Bonnier Ventures, and Sisu Game Ventures. This brings Resolution's total funding to $38.5 million US.
Whew! And that takes us to the end of Investment Interlude. And we're going to take a little break.
Virtual Economy is an F-Squared initiative. And along with pro bono business consulting for up-and-coming developers, it's a way we are working to give back to the community that has already given us so much. To find out more about F-Squared and the services we can provide, including pitch prep, media training, mock reviews, and business strategy guidance, visit our website at fsquared.biz.
And we're back.
And it's time for Quick Hits.
I know everybody has been waiting for this, been waiting for us to do...
The quickest of hits.
The longest of quick hits.
27 quick hits.
It's going to be a marathon, but we're going to get through it.
Yep.
Mike?
Yes.
Start us off.
Summer Games Done Quick has raised more than $2.8 million for Doctors Without Borders. This brings the total amount raised through the Games Done Quick speedrunning initiative to more than $31 million for charity. Congrats to all the speedrunners. Congrats to the organizers. This is fantastic.
That's
good job.
Beautiful. Gamers doing good. We love to see it. App Annie has announced that mobile spending hit a record 34 billion bells for Tom Nook in Q2 of 2021. Consumer spending increased $2 billion sequentially as well. Consumer spending averaged out at $1.7 billion per week, up 35% from Q2 2019.
Yeah, very interesting, right?
I would be interested. Yeah, I mean, like, I know what it's up sequentially, which is great, but seeing that big jump, even though we're at home...
Yeah.
And we have been at home, a lot of us, and things are starting to open up in the United States, and that's fine. But, man, it's really interesting to see the mobile market grow.
And seeing it sustain.
Yes.
Yep. So we'll see what happens once things are fully opened up.
Absolutely.
Slightly older news, but something we absolutely wanted to talk about. Microsoft has announced that Xbox Cloud Gaming is now available to all iOS users and PC users in 22 countries. The service is included with Game Pass Ultimate. Microsoft has teamed up with Backbone, Razer, and OtterBox for official made-for-Xbox controllers for use with mobile devices. We went out and picked up a Backbone and tried it out. And pretty impressed. I mean, it's not perfect. The Backbone feels great.
The Backbone's wonderful.
It's such a wonderful controller. I know that there are some people who prefer the Razer Kishi because it folds up a little bit more. The reason we went with the Backbone is because it does have a pass-through 3.5 millimeter headphone port.
Yes. I personally might pick up a Kishi myself because it also has cooling.
Yeah.
And I think that for me, I might need more cooling on my phone. My phone's a little bit older now, so it struggles. I started playing The Wild at Heart on my phone with the Backbone, and I'm like, I'm going to burn myself.
Yeah, it's...
I'm going to burn myself.
It's a lot. I mean, obviously, I mean, I saw people, some people saying, like, oh, I wish one of these worked with a case. There's so many different case form factors that there's just no way. I have the MagSafe case on my iPhone 12, and it's easy enough to pop off.
I have a custom case.
I know you do.
It's
very pretty.
It's Neo Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
Neo Crystal Tokyo, rather, from Sailor Moon. Anyway, moving on from my phone. Iron Galaxy has announced the hiring of Rajesh Marshall as its new program lead for diversity, equity, and inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
I love this. You might recall our conversation with Iron Galaxy co-CEO, and she wasn't even she just had gotten her co-CEO.
Yep. I think she announced it first on the show, and it, yeah. It was
and then
cool.
she went out and there was a press release and it was it was
a
so
couple
cool.
weeks later even.
Yeah, it was awesome. We had so much fun chatting with Chelsea. So we did talk with Chelsea Blasco last October, so that's episode 49 for those of you that are curious, during which we discussed the studio's commitment to employee well-being and DEI culture. Because as we have talked about on this show over and over and over again, DEI is not an initiative, it is culture.
Yeah.
Marshall was previously employed at Progressive Insurance and serves on the Diversity Curriculum Committee at Georgia State University. I'm having problems.
It's okay.
I'm having problems.
I believe in you.
With words.
I believe in you.
I can word good. Where she recently received her MBA. So, quote, Marshall will help continue to drive and implement creative, sustainable, and innovative programs that support the company's overall strategic DEI efforts during the development and launch of an original multiplayer melee combat IP for consoles and PC.
Love seeing Iron Galaxy doing original stuff, too. They do amazing port work.
They really do. And see, this is one of the things that I think is really important to highlight. You can go from doing work-for-hire stuff, like being a porting house, or like Saber used to do, Saber Interactive. You know, they were very much work-for-hire, doing ports and everything like that as well. And look at them now.
Yep.
Right.
I did speak to Nathan Vella. I spoke to a Cappy when he was still there about the difficulties of transitioning from work for hire to own IP.
Well, because you're assuming a lot more risk.
Well, right? It's also you scale very differently. The operations are very, very different from between work for hire and owned IP.
So if we look at the way that Certain Affinity tends to staff up, and Certain Affinity is based out of Austin, Texas, they are very much so focused on work for hire. They're starting to move into IP, original IP. It's hard to do because the way that you're absolutely right, the way that you staff up is completely different. Yeah. Because it has to, because on the one hand, it has to be very sustainable for all of your work for hire stuff, and Certain Affinity is very, you know, like into that. So anyway, love to see that for Iron Galaxy. If you are curious about our conversation with Chelsea Blasco and you were not able to listen to it when it first came out in 2020.
Mm-hmm. It's episode 49.
Episode 49. It's good stuff.
Love this. Thunderful has announced the hire of ID at Xbox Global Partnership Management Director and friend of the show, Agostino Simonetta. Ago will be serving as Thunderful's Chief Strategy and Investment Officer, helping to grow the publishing business. From all of us here, which is, I guess, both of us here.
Virtual Economy, which includes the two people in this room.
Congrats, Ago. Really happy for you, friend.
Congrats. That's really good stuff. All right, Casey Hudson, former General Manager of BioWare, has announced the founding of Humanoid Studios, Hudson is still building the team, but according to comments he made on Twitter, Humanoid is working on new IP.
Yep, Riot Games veterans have announced the opening of Amihan Entertainment. The studio was founded by Naomi MacArthur, who was a senior game designer at Riot. She's working with Kenneth Liu, who was a revenue lead at Riot, and Paul Loy, who was a technology lead at Riot. The studio will be entirely remote, dedicated to, quote, uplifting lifelong games.
I love that. I also love how diverse the three founders are. Mm-hmm. Like, that's fantastic.
Yes.
Developer Room 8 Studio is expanding from its headquarters in Ukraine to Montreal. The studio is expected to open in the next 2 years and will be led by general manager and executive producer Matthew Zorn, formerly of Nutaku Publishing. Envizio Creations, Funcom Games Canada, and EA.
Yep. Tencent has opened a new studio, Uncapped Games, with two Blizzard vets leading the team. David Kim was the lead systems designer for Diablo 4. He left the studio in April. Jason Hughes was Diablo 4's lead producer. He left Blizzard in May. Their first game will be an RTS for PC.
Interesting.
Yes.
Jonathan Durr, director on Fox Next's Marvel Strike Force, has launched a brand new studio, Foxbear Games. Foxbear is owned by Wildlife Studios and is the third new studio launched by the company this year. Foxbear will be working on RPGs.
Here's an interesting one. Former Rockstar lead writer Dan Houser seems to have founded a new company called Absurd Ventures in Games. We say, quote, seems because the company hasn't been announced formally. Instead, a French publication, Rockstar Mag, which I'm not sure if they just cover Rockstar games or if that's just a coincidence, identified the business listing and dug in a bit to determine all of this interesting stuff. So, very interesting.
We will have to wait for that to be confirmed, I suppose.
Yes.
So the Subo Group has opened its second Canadian studio, Timber Games, in my beloved city of Vancouver, British Columbia. Yay! I hope this means that Vancouver's game development scene is coming back because it died so spectacularly.
Oh.
It was really bad. That's why I commissioned a piece about it, and now it lives on Game Daily. Timber is part of Sumo's Pipeworks studio, which it picked up for $100 million in September 2020. The new team is headed by Joe Nichols, former VP of EA Vancouver. He was previously a VP and GM at Maxis and director of Capcom Vancouver. Vancouver died so spectacularly with regards to the game industry. I really want to see it come back.
Yeah, I met Joe at Gamescom 2016. He was working on Dead Rising 4. We had a wonderful conversation. Really nice guy. I'm so, so happy to see him founding a new studio and
staying in Van.
Yeah, it's great. It's so cool. So, Joe, congratulations if you happen to hear this. It's been a long time. We should catch up at some point. Nichols, his co-founders include Zoe Curno, who will be studio production director and was previously at the Coalition, so the Gears studio, where she worked as a production director for 7 years, and Jeff Coates, who will serve as creative director, formerly of Relic, Capcom, and EA.
Awesome. Samuel Partridge, developer of Over the Alps, has opened a new studio in London called Tributary Games. The studio will be working on social narrative games with a narrative strategy game currently in the works. Ooh. The game has an unannounced publisher that will be revealed soon.
Yeah. Now, remember we said, so that's the end of all of the new studio announcements. That was like across both of them. I think it was like, what, 10 studios?
You know what?
Maybe a little bit less than that. Okay. But
if we reflect on that, like just for like half a second, considering back in 2018 and 2019, how many studios closed?
Yeah.
This is nice.
This is nice.
There's love reporting on studios opening.
So, there was a thread going around, and I don't want to name the person because I don't want to draw any negative. There's nothing negative here. About there being an exodus of major talent from Blizzard. I mean, we talked about Blizzard in here as well.
We did, and it's not just Blizzard. Like we're talking about an exodus from AAA into creating new indie studios, whether or not these are working in AA or if they're in, you know, they're very indie. This is great. I love watching all of those seeds bloom.
Right. And this is the marriage of the two halves of this episode, right? Because the reason why this is happening, this is not a bad thing. This is not like, oh, Blizzard's bleeding talent or X other publisher or developer is bleeding talent. No, this is, there's so much investment money going back to the top of this show, yes, that there are opportunities out there to create new studios because the pie is growing, and especially after COVID and picking up so many new gamers, yes, so many new members of this huge, already huge audience with diverse interests. There's a lot of opportunity out there, and VCs are seeing it, mm-hmm, and there's a lot of funding.
It's beautiful. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Okay, so moving on. Perfect World has announced that Magic Legends, the action RPG, free-to-play action RPG based in the Magic the Gathering universe, multiverse, Planesverse, will not make it. It will not make it out of open beta. So that's, it's over. Really,
that's, I noticed because I got a refund.
So did I. The free-to-play action RPG was developed by Cryptic. It's going to be sunset on October 31st. Real money sales were stopped immediately with the announcement. All in-game items are now available for purchase via earned currency. All previous purchases, as we already said, were refunded. And if you haven't received yours, they're still rolling out. And that's whether you purchased it on ARK or through the EGS. Also, I got an email. You probably got the same one with a bunch of like complimentary stuff. Like, hey, thanks for being one of our players. You know, here's some free stuff for one of our other games. There's some Star Trek Online stuff in there. There's some Neverwinter stuff in there.
I love Star Trek Online. It's such a fun game. I haven't played it in like 10 years. But I remember when that game first came out. It just ate my life. I played it so much with Steven and my dad. It was just...
Is it all on starships? Like,
no.
Oh, you have like away teams and stuff?
Oh yeah, you have away teams and away team missions. I'm sure everything's changed, but back even when it first launched, it was a robust experience.
All right, cool. But, you know, hearts obviously go out to those at Cryptic. There were, of course, some layoffs associated with this.
Yeah, that sucks.
You know, Magic Legends, I think, had some really good ideas. We played it on stream the day it launched. Free pack. And...
There's a story there. You can ask us on Discord sometime.
Or if you're on our streams, you can just type !! free pack and you'll get an earful. It had some really good ideas. It needed a lot of work, and I don't think they held onto the audience. Clearly, they didn't hold onto the audience to make it financially viable in the long term. So this game will not make it out of open beta.
Yeah, that's really too bad. I think that this game could have been better as a premium experience. I think I would have been much happier, in fact, with it had it been a premium experience. Even if it was like, okay, I'm going to pay monthly for this, you know, multiplayer online game, fine. But listen, sometimes free-to-play just, it isn't always the right model. Yep. And I mean, I spoke to the Faria developers about this a number of years ago, right?
Yeah.
Where they were premium to begin with, then they went free to play, and they're like, wow, free to play is so much harder. And then they went back to premium, and it worked out a lot better for them the second time around. So, you know, it's tough out there. It really is. Roblox is doing some interesting stuff, though. So Roblox has signed a deal with Sony Music. This follows the virtual concert held by Lil Nas X late last year. The deal is intended to find new ways to marry gaming with the music industry, which was especially hit hard during the pandemic due to the cancellation of live events.
No, this does not mean you can suddenly broadcast Sony Music in your Roblox games.
That's not what that means. Additionally, Roblox has launched in China as of this week. That's going to be really interesting to watch.
Absolutely. We have three EA stories. First, EA has completed its rebrand of DICE LA. That brand name, the studio name, is now Sunset. It's now known as Ripple Effect. It's being led by Christian Grass, and it will be further overseen by Respawn co-founder Vince Zampella. Very, very interesting arc here. Remember the suit that Activision filed against Vince Zampella and Jason West, because the EA was poaching them, and then Respawn was independent, and then they were acquired by EA. Now Vince, of course, climbing up the ranks at EA even more, no big surprise, but now overseeing multiple studios, so that's pretty great.
What else is going on, Mike?
Codemasters CEO Frank Sagnier and CFO Rashid Varashia are departing the company following the studio's $1.2 billion acquisition by EA.
No golden handcuffs,
it seems. No golden handcuffs. I mean, it's about 4 months. Codemasters says that both of their departures were planned but accelerated by the acquisition, and they're going to be leaving at the end of this month. And we got one more.
I'm so excited about talking about this story, which is why I was like,
I picked up what you're putting down.
Yeah, I figured as much. Okay, so... this story was so interesting to watch. Hackers have begun dripping out data from the social engineering incursion into the publisher's systems that saw source code for FIFA 21 and the Frostbite engine stolen. Yeah. Now, this
we covered
was,
this. We talked about this.
We have talked about this. Absolutely. This is not your traditional hack. This was a social engineering hack. And yikes.
Yeah.
But it gets worse. Mostly for the hackers. According to Vice, the hackers wanted Motherboard to, help them extort.
Now, remember, Motherboard broke the original story of how this all happened.
It did. Absolutely. And, you know, because it's Motherboard, Motherboard said, hell no!
Yeah.
Hell no. EA says that it believes that the stolen data does not include anything that pertains to player privacy or risks its games, its business, or players. So EA's like, go pound sand.
Yep. All right.
That was fun.
All right, I got a fun one, though.
This one's also really fun.
Nintendo wants to remind you that it is not a good idea to fuck around and find out. Because you will, in fact, find out. You might recall ROM site ROM Universe was ordered to pay Nintendo $2.1 million in a number of installments. The site missed its first $50 payment, and Nintendo is now on the warpath. The company is now reiterating its request for a permanent injunction with the belief that operator Matthew Storman might reopen it under a new name. Nintendo says that the $50 per month payment was proposed by Storman, and failure to make even the first payment, quote, demonstrates that Nintendo has no adequate remedy at law for defendants' past or future infringement, and underscores the need for a permanent injunction.
So, Mike, in this particular case, what does the permanent injunction mean?
That means that it... Look, he shouldn't open another ROM site. Like, this is obviously violating the law. But if there is an actual injunction, and he does it, and he's violating the law, like, then we get into some places where... I don't know if there could be criminal repercussions because this is civil.
This is civil.
But he could be violating the court. He could be found in contempt of court. And then there's some jail time potentially.
So they're going to smack him with the big book.
They're going to hit him with like three books. And one of them's going right between the legs.
Yikes.
In the jimmies.
Don't love that. Yeah. Okay.
But come on. If you propose $50 a month.
And Nintendo says
for the rest of your life, your kids' lives, and probably your grandkids' lives. And Nintendo's like, okay, fine, $50 a month. And you can't even cough up that first payment? Yeah, you're screwed.
Yeah, maybe don't make ROM sites. Listen, this also speaks to the importance of video game preservation.
Yes.
If we did better with video game preservation, we wouldn't need... The need for ROM sites, in fact, would be gone. They would just not exist anymore, yeah. Right? Yep. Because we would have a robust way to... play and interact with and share the games of our past and games that we might have missed and games that don't exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Video game preservation!
Exactly.
Shaking my fist. Old lady shakes fist at video game preservation. And then also goes and talks to friends in video game preservation to see what we can do to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of fucking around, Apple has lost its appeal against Epic in Australia. So I guess they found out.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Uh-huh. The iPhone maker hoped that it would convince an Australian court that the U.S. suit was more than enough, since they were practically identical. Epic comes away the winner here, for now. The suit will continue on Australia, where Epic is glad that it will be, quote, examined in the context of Australian laws.
Yes. A couple of Ubisoft stories now.
Neat.
Ubisoft has identified that the, quote, occurrence of inappropriate behavior by employees is a substantial risk to the publisher's financial performance.
Ooh.
Axios spotted this in the company's universal registration document, which is similar to an SEC annual filing where you list all of your risks, and you kind of mention, like, how severe they are and how they could impact your business, all that.
So who found this?
Axios.
Oh, that's so good.
The risk due to behavior of employees was listed as moderate. But the company also upgraded risk due to potential concerns with attracting and retaining talent to high. So until it changes its image, it's going to have a hard time. Everybody who walks in the door for an interview is going to be asking these questions.
Good. And they honestly, they should be.
Yep.
Considering the reputation that they have built for themselves as not being a safe place to work.
Yep.
This is what they got to do.
Absolutely.
And remember, as we have talked to Kate Sanchez, who works in DEI, in Silicon Valley, for crying out loud, this kind of thing takes time.
Yeah.
It always takes time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad to see that the taking time is continuing to progress, even though it's not moving nearly as fast as most of us would want.
Absolutely.
All right. Speaking of change, Assassin's Creed is going to look a little different moving forward. It's a little different.
Yep.
Yeah. So this happened when Mike and I were away on vacation. We're just like, what's this?
Yeah.
Ubisoft has announced plans for Assassin's Creed Infinity, which honestly sounds like a rapper.
Yeah.
for future Assassin's Creed experiences, kind of similar to how, you know, the Master Chief Collection worked for Halo.
Right. The difference, of course, being that Master Chief Collection kind of bundled older games, and this is going to be kind of, I would say, like a launch pad, or even maybe a separate staging ground for all of these different experiences. It's really smart. And you and I talked about this while we were away, because one of the things that it does is it gives them access. You're not starting from zero every time. From a communications perspective, we talk about monthly active users and daily active users.
For sure.
It's very easy for Ubisoft to turn around and say, well, Assassin's Creed Infinity, you know, just like Warzone, they talk about, oh, the new season, the new this, season, and it has this many players. But they're not starting from zero. Right now, every Assassin's Creed game starts from zero. They have to reacquire all every of those users. New user.
And at this juncture, considering how many years that Assassin's Creed has been around, I mean, Assassin's Creed has been around since like 2008, I think, was when the first one came out. Might have been 2007.
Yeah. It was originally supposed to be a launch title for the Xbox 360, but got delayed.
So I don't remember if it was 2007 or 8. I remember I played it in 2008 when James and I moved to Vancouver, I'm pretty sure. And I didn't like it very much, but I loved Assassin's Creed 2, and I've loved most of the Assassin's Creed games for many, many years. So the initiative will be led by Marc-Alexis Cote, a founding member of Ubisoft Quebec, as executive producer. So this is really cool. Production efforts on Assassin's Creed Infinity will be led by Ubisoft Montreal's Julien Laferrière. Creative leads for Assassin's Creed Infinity will be a cross-studio collaboration. Jonathan Dumont and Clint Hawking will share the leadership duties overseeing teams at Ubisoft Quebec and Ubisoft Montreal, respectively.
I want to talk about this for just a second, because there was a report that came out, and then, of course, Ubisoft announced it, and it was like, they're like, oh, well, it's a service. They're doing it as a games as a service. Folks, I want to be honest with you. Assassin's Creed has been a service-based game.
Since Origins.
Oh, earlier than that.
Origins was when they were really, really, really explicit about it, though.
No, I think when it went full multiplayer in the campaign for Unity was probably when it really tipped.
That's really interesting. Like, that's an interesting perspective because, again, when I think about it, when I think about it becoming a service game, it really came down to how it was, you know, how it was monetized after launch, right? And the multiplayer stuff was, you're absolutely right. I didn't play Unity because it launched with a lot of problems, so I ended up just completely bypassing it.
Like Missing Faces.
The Missing Faces thing really scared me, so I didn't want anything to do with Missing Faces. It scared the crap out of me. It looked so scary.
Tongues were a wagon.
It was not okay.
Just unrooted to anything. Just in between, like out of a skeleton with, like, the eyeballs.
Oh, no, it was so gross. I hated it. I remember watching some of those videos, and I'm like, I never want to play this game. This game's going to scare the crap out of me. It's scarier than, like, Silent Hill 2. But when I think about, Syndicate.
Yeah.
Right? Did you consider Syndicate also?
I think as soon as they started selling credits within the game, and I think that was Unity.
Okay, so that's
what it might have been in Black Flag.
I didn't play Black Flag.
Because Black Flag was interesting because it launched with the last generation, it launched with PS4 and Xbox One. Mm-hmm. And it was the last Ubisoft game to have an online pass. And the reason I know that is because Joe Juba and I worked on a story together at Game Informer that there was stuff that was locked behind, like major, major stuff that was locked behind the online pass. Mm-hmm. We got in touch with Ubisoft. We reported out the story. It was gone within 24 hours. They had removed the...
Oh, heck.
Yeah. The power of journalism.
Yay. You did it. Anyway, so this is going to be really interesting. I'm excited because, like, maybe this will allow other folks that weren't able to, like, I don't know, play Assassin's Creed 2 when it first came out. They can go and play as Ezio, because Ezio is, like, one of my favorite assassins.
Yeah, I would love to see them really modernize how they present it, pull in those older experiences, pull in the Chronicles games.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring those Chronicles games over.
Yeah, and then every new stuff. So when you have a new story, a new campaign with a new assassin, it drops into Infinity as a major expansion. Like when you talk about MMO style expansions, not that there's a parallel in gameplay, but in terms of how those are communicated,
how that's packaged.
And then you have from month to month, you've got your monthly active users, and maybe there's an Assassin's Creed, like, as part of, you know, Uplay Plus. You know, obviously you get all those games anyway, so they use that to help motivate Uplay Plus. Like, it's a synergistic strategy that I really understand, but I think people that knee-jerked and said, oh, they're turning Assassin's Creed into a service game. Why does every game have to be a service game? You missed the boat 6 years ago, man. maybe even longer, maybe, 6-7 years ago. Yeah, like, this has already happened. And the fact that when I sit down to play Immortals, Phoenix Rising, it has those monetized cosmetics and you can buy those credits.
But it's not necessary gameplay. If you don't want to engage with the microtransactions, much like microtransactions basically everywhere, you don't have to do it.
And just like Destiny, you don't have to engage with the microtransactions. You're just buying the new content when it comes out, the new stories and all that stuff. And maybe they're going to link the new stuff via the Animus or via Abstergo or something like that. But I think that anybody who is worried that this is going to turn into some MMO or into some multiplayer thing, like, okay, maybe there's going to be multiplayer in the future. I'm not ruling that out. But in terms of how it changes your Assassin's Creed experience, I think this is mostly about unifying and marketing, being able to get in front of that existing audience. Oh, I log into Assassin's Creed Infinity to play the Valhalla campaign, which means I'm getting updates every time about, oh, hey, there's a new Assassin's Creed game or a new Assassin's Creed campaign that's out, and I can buy it right through Infinity, and I can upgrade it right through Infinity, and then I have one launcher on my dashboard for whether it's PlayStation 5 or Xbox Series or even on PC, where I'm accessing all of my Assassin's Creed stuff. So I think that the worry about it was a little pearl-clutchy.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I'm very excited about it. I think it could be really great. I would love to have all of the Assassin's Creed games that I've loved and that I've played to be able to go back. And like when our little ones get a little bit older, or even with our NB getting older, you know, 13 years old, be able to say, like, we're gonna sit down and play, you know, Brotherhood or something.
We're gonna speed run Assassin's Creed 1. We can do it. You can speed run Assassin's Creed 1 pretty quickly.
I believe you. I wish, much like the original Watch Dogs, that I enjoyed the first installment.
Yeah. Moving on.
Warner Brothers has denied a report that NetherRealm and TT Games are going to be up for sale. The report emerged last week and follows the merger of Warner Media with Discovery in March.
Yeah, in fact, they were pretty adamant. Like, no, NetherRealm and TT Games are both kind of part of our plans. So,
okay, yeah. Awesome.
So that answers one of those questions that we
have for you. You know what, quite frankly, I'm glad. Glad that Warner's taking it seriously and that they're going to take care of their, you know, some of their biggest studios.
Yes. Pokemon Go. Pokemon Whoa.
Pokemon Yo.
Yo. Pokemon Go has passed $5 billion in revenue just in time for its fifth anniversary. Sensor Tower issued the estimate with some additional detail. Pogo is most popular in the U.S., representing $1.9 billion or 36% of the revenue. Japan is second with 32%. Germany is in a distant third with only 5.4%.
Ooh.
Android is more popular than iOS, but not by much. About 52.8% of players play and pay, more importantly, on Android.
That makes sense. I love me some Pogo.
Yep.
Remember when we covered the report that Netflix was hunting for someone to lead a games initiative? Do you remember?
I do remember.
Pepperidge Farm remembers. Surprise!
I remember.
Surprise! They've hired someone! Mike Verdu, previously of Oculus, EA, Kabam, Zynga, and TapZen, will lead Netflix's charge into gaming. According to a Bloomberg report, Netflix will begin offering video games on its streaming platform within the next year.
Interesting to see what that's going to look like. I assume that they are going to be just doing cloud stuff.
I would imagine it's going to be a lot of interactive narrative.
Maybe. It's going to be interesting. Very curious to see how that shapes up, especially because they have such an enormous install base. Remember, Netflix said that their biggest competitor or one of their biggest threats or competition for time was Fortnite.
Ah, Forkknife.
Forkknife. Ah, finally, we wrap Quick Hits and the show with some good stuff. Games for Change is partnering with the New Georgia Project for a civic engagement game jam.
Oh, we love to see it.
Yeah. This will be an in-person team-based competition from September 24th to 26th in Atlanta, Georgia.
The goal is to foster civic engagement in untapped constituencies, so young voters, first-time voters, and the gaming community.
Indeed.
12 teams will compete for cash prizes, including a top prize of $10,000. The winner will also have the chance to have their game produced and put in use by the NGP.
That's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I love it. I absolutely love it.
Games for Change. They recently just had their big event. There was a lot of great content that came out of that. I was so sick this week, so yep. I didn't even get a chance to watch it. but it's been really great catching up on some of the biggest beats. There were some, I just, Games for Change. They are, they're always doing great stuff.
Indeed.
But we did it, Mike.
We did it.
We did it. And with only minimal amounts of sniffling, coughing, and clearing of throats.
Hallelujah. We'll see if we can do this well tomorrow.
We shall see.
I believe in us.
I believe in us, too. So thank you so much for listening to the Virtual Economy Podcast. This has been episode 92. You can follow us on Twitter at @VirtualEconcast. I am at Amanda Farrow, still refusing to spell my last name.
But I am at Footerish, Futterish.
Completely on brand, as per usual. You can subscribe to our RSS feed at virtualeconcast.com. You can also listen to us on all major podcasting platforms, as per usual. Including Spotify, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Casts. I always miss one. What are you?
Pocket Sand!
Considering how sick you are right now, I'm very, very, very entertained by the fact that you hit that octave. Please subscribe. If you enjoyed listening to this show as much as Mike and I always enjoy recording it, We would love it if you would, you know, join our little growing online fan base, community, question mark? I don't know. And even better than that, we'd love to know what you think. So review the show. What else can folks do to let us know what's going on with
us? You can ask us questions. You can DM us at @VirtualEconcast. You can send us an email at podcast@fsquared.biz. You can join our Discord. We actually do have a listener question tomorrow about one of the topics we'll be discussing.
Neat.
So that is in the show notes and raring to go. We also have Signal, so if you have some super secret stuff you want to talk to us about, because we are still interested in doing original reporting, we're glad to do that. You can hit us up via DM and we will give you our Signal numbers. We hopefully will be getting back to writing at some time soon. We have been so swamped with the other half of what we do, or for Amanda, the other one of the other pieces of what she does, because she's
what are you trying to say?
I'm saying you're busy.
I am busy.
So we'll hopefully be getting back to writing, but we've been very busy with consulting work. June between E3, V3, and consulting and then going away was quite a lot. In fact, though, we will probably be back streaming on Thursday because the EA event is happening on Thursday.
I think so. So you definitely want to go give us a follow over on Twitch, and that's twitch.tv/virtualeconomy.
It is. And if you're interested in supporting the show, we do have a Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/virtualeconomy. We are still hoping to raise enough money to do transcriptions on a weekly basis for the show.
It's expensive.
It is very expensive.
It's very spendy. We want to make sure that, you know, even if we are using at any rate, we want to make sure that anyone that wants to engage with our work is able to do so, and not everybody is going to be able to do so with, you know, auditory stuff. So we want to take care of you.
Yep, but we will be back tomorrow with episode 93. We'll be covering some deeper dives. So today was quantity. Tomorrow is in depth.
Yeah, tomorrow is in depth. I know if you've ever listened to my podcast with Steve Dutzman over on Engaged Family Gaming, we often talk about how Mike and I really get into the weeds. Like, we really go. Today was about, we didn't really go. We just gave you the broad strokes of what's going on in the industry. Tomorrow, we're going deep.
Yeah, a lot of platform talk. A
lot of platform talk. It's going to be awesome, and I'm really looking forward to it. So, with that, remember to wash your hands because you don't want to get summer colds like we did.
Yeah, please.
And honestly, this is not because we didn't wash our hands. This is because we have children.
Yeah.
Stay hydrated and be good to each other.
We'll see you tomorrow, folks.